thank you all for coming tonight. And I speak for all of us in the Department of English, for our chair, John Ernest, our associate chair, Tim Sweet, our mistress of everything, Laura Brady, my colleagues in creative writing, Jim Harms, Kevin Oderman, Ethel Morgan Smith, Alyssa High, Marianne Salmon, and Glenn Taylor. Thank you, thank you, thank you for being here. It's a great crowd. Wonderful. A little housekeeping matter. We are moving away from paper announcements of readings. We will now be announcing strictly via email. So if you aren't on our email list, there's a sheet and a pen up here to sign up for our email list. So please remember to do that, because obviously we love having you in the audience. I think you guys are in the emergency exit, so you will just clear the way for everyone in case there's too much excitement over the reading, which I'm sure there will be. Ida Stewart, who graduated, oh, I'm Mark Presidus, by the way, I didn't introduce myself, that's me. Ida Stewart, who graduated from WVU in 2004, visited my poetry class this past fall. It was early in the semester, and because it was a beginning poetry class, a number of my students had starry ideas about how easy it is to become a published poet. You take a few creative writing classes at WVU, you spend a few years polishing what you write, then you send off your manuscript to a publisher or book contest, and bingo, you're a published author. Of course, it never works like that. Hardly ever works like that, because there was Ida as proof that sometimes it does work like that. So for the rest of the semester, I had to counsel my students on what it usually takes to become a published poet. Years and years of working on your poems, years and years of one rejection after another, the onset of gray in your hair, the onset of arthritis in your writing hand, a membership in the AARP. But of course, there was Ida, who is several years, decades away from an AARP membership, to refute my warning. When you're as talented as Ida is, when you write a poem as clean and playful and inventive as Ida does, when you invoke the world as vividly as Ida does, your writing career goes from A to book publication a little faster than usual. Ida's book Gloss won the 2011 Perugia Press Prize. Her poetry has been published in top journals such as Field, the Laurel Review, the Journal, and Line Break. It's a great pleasure to welcome her back to WVU, Ida Stewart.
You had to draw that disillusioning of your students. Thank you all for coming. It's really cozy in here. So, thank you so much to WVU for having me back. The last time I was in the English department at WVU, it was in Stansbury Hall. I must say, I miss the fighter jet posters on the wall and the ROTC experiences. Thank you so much to Marianne Salmon, especially, and Mark, who I got to study with when I was here. And they are very much why I am here right now. So thank you so much. Thanks to some of my nearest and dearest friends, Morgantownians. It's good to see you. And hugest thanks in the world to my beautiful family. I'm the luckiest daughter in the world and sister. So hello. They didn't bat an eyelash when I said I wanted to go to poetry school. So, so we'll just dive right in. Ginseng. Wild sarsaparilla is the fool's saying. Follow Jack in the pulpit, golden seal, cohoshes black and blue. To find true heal all, fall head over, get brave, get fangled up in bobcat mouths or caves and wrangle twang and drawl from fiddleheads into a single clear-cut note. Then forage through the leaf-like chiming sundried light. Hear me, stranger. Feel it pull you underground, elide you, forest body, heart, and mind to root, moving through the dirt, a shape like a person. You are wherewithal and you are wild. Jack in the Pulpit, Golden Seal, Cohosh's Black and Blue. You are real and dream and dissolute. I mean, you are a tangle and a song. This next poem is one of a series of poems that goes throughout the book that is spoken from the voice of a mountaintop, which if you're teaching English in here and you've told your students, don't use personification or anthropomorphism, well, here we are. sometimes it works, I think. A lot of the poems in the book are sort of in response to or dealing with the concept of mountaintop removal and blasting apart the earth and sort of thinking about what that means and can the earth speak and things like that. And so that's sort of where these poems come from. So in some of the poems, the mountaintop speaks, and some of the poems, it's sort of a voice speaking to the mountaintop or from that sort of same character space. So, the mountaintop as expression or choking on her own words. Something has to give, and thus this voice up into evacuated space. Here in my gravel, a paragraph you couldn't parse into sense, no matter where you'd locate, relocate, allocate, elocute, cut. I mean, a handful of rock equals roughly one syllable. Its breadth, if you could hold a blasted conversation. Talk the talk. Remove the point from the A, and there you have it, havoc, on the wailing, ailing alphabet. Where to begin? And this poem has an epigraph from Larry Gibson, who you may have heard of. He's a man who lives down in Boone County and has a bunch of family land that has all been mined out around him, but he refuses to sell his little patch of Cape Ford Mountain to be mountaintop removal mined. So the quote from Larry Gibson is, "You can have my right arm, but you'll never get my mountain." Point blank. This is a point, a green island in a sea of scar. A rise not unlike his pot belly under the neon green t-shirt, and what with the hilltop cemetery like a belly full of bodies resting sweetly, we could fairly call his attachment umbilical. And after all, his overall pockets and pores emptied of the earth, all that's left squirreled away is his blood. But back to the point, and how they're making it for him, finer and higher and deader on than he ever could, waiting here with the squat rocks waiting to be eroded into the holler. The sound of their machines, he thinks, brainless as barking, that ceaseless ghost dog of his filling in the blank of night. And one more story and I'll stop telling you about these poems. This is a poem, has two boys in it. The first boy is my brother Donovan, who's here. And it sort of originated from thinking about when I was a kid, I had this sort of fantasy in my mind that we could just sort of live outside in the backyard under the pine tree and make a little like playhouse and sleep out there, and then we could come inside for dinner maybe sometimes and stuff like that. So I've been thinking about that, and then at the same time, several of these poems are written in response to leaving Morgantown and being away, but then seeing on the news or Facebook various news stories taking place in this town and that sort of strange displacement of being far away from home and then seeing your home in your living room on your television. And I had been clicking around online and had seen how a couple years ago a little autistic boy in Morgantown had gotten lost with his family in Dolly Sods and eventually was found safe and sound. But that was sort of chiming in, harmonizing with my thoughts about living outside as a kid and what that means. Salamander. How long before the wilderness takes root in a boy already half gone or half arrived, half wild, a boy with hollows for the filling. They showed home movies on the local news. Note his jacket, his height, his dirty blonde. And note the windy voice, the bramble-snagged attention span. Were we at all sincere in our plans to steal away on tender feet and make a home beneath the backyard holly. Remember our plans and responsibilities. You're off collecting food while I'm at home, weaving grass-stuffed leaf blankets for winter. We'd whittle branches and pick out pretty stones for trips inside, gifts for the holidays. Yes, 4 days is more than enough time. They found him curled asleep beneath the laurel, a bear cub, a natty bumpo, all in one piece, and no one thought to check for fresh green shoots growing fast alongside his veins. Our fear, I think, that once we left, we'd never come home. Or worse, we'd forever be longing to return to nature. Mama's dinners would leave us hungry for something more loamy, and like fireflies we caught and tended to with mealy meals of leaves and dirt, we'd starve in captivity despite its comforts, gradually slowing down and losing the will to be anything but dirt, like the salamanders sleeping in the pond. But then again, say it, salamander. It's been so long since you've caught one or wanted to, let alone pronounce the word out loud, and feel the syllables break apart in your mouth. A leg of the word, a tail slipping away from its meaning, bitter bitten, earthen sour. Oh, Sal, oh, Mandy, the wild does leave you when you leave it. The child turns back to child. In your mouth, the taste of green gone brown. Soil. In your mouth sounds like soul, like the word's been oiled, all the old consolidated, uprooted from this spit of overtold land. I hear you grazing in the understory, your mouth full of maple keys, black walnut husks, cold autumn dirt and rock, bark, lichen, and broken breaking green, sour mash. Your mouth's a still, a stolen cave in which to fold the world. That poem stems from moving to Georgia, where I live now, where people have real accents and say words like soul instead of soil. Paula Deen, who we were talking about at dinner tonight, always says oil instead of oil. So pay attention. This next poem is from another series in the book of, I call them glossary poems. There's several poems in the book that have little tiny poems or poem fragments in them that each begin or sort of riff on a couple of letters of prefix. So this first series of glossary entries is called code words, words that start with C-O. Collapse. Cave-ins are givens. The L broke loose, gone vexed, flatlined, dividend. Coal, forests, time, fire, burning holes in our pockets. Coal, you know the old king, calling for his fiddlers three, the company he keeps, sawing through the breakdown. Coelacanth, hello again, old mucilaginous, oil-oozing, cave-dwelling, hollow-spined, hinge-skulled, pseudo-lunged, linear-hearted, shark-intestined, four-legged fish of the copious fossil record skipping for 65 million years. Coalescence. More or less grow together. Say sludge. Say coal fly ash slurry spill five times fast. Coal cry hurry still. Squall fly fast as hell, cold fish flash kill, soul flesh slurry shill, stole vile sorry spill. Coil, as in the garden hose, or pliant mortal bodies ringing one another, or tendrils to prevent entanglement. Core, unburnt center of a coal, coke, cold heart in throat, see Adam's apple, the choke. The corrupt nature of uncertain roots, not from heart, cur, maybe from body, core, or from core, horn. Who knows, okay? What's cut out and what remains? Hold. Because we're looking for the seven sisters, that's why we're here. Embedded in the grass like river rocks in silt, or little moons of deer eyes in the woods, or constellations like pushpins holding up the heft of night. And damn if it weren't for the clouds. We say we're here for the sake of ritual. Yes, ritual, right. An ordinary, out of the ordinary duty to warm air and this patch of sky. And what is any night but a threshold kiss? I'm thinking temporary, temporary. Conditions were perfect 300 million years ago, so now 1,000 feet of darkness below us, men are paid by the ton to haul out pieces of the dark. A handful of coal as black as emptiness, as our mountain holding its shape against the sky tonight, the gown tearing at its seams but holding. We think we're in the dark, but we have no idea. We think that we have time to burn and lean together as if against the inevitable, as if space might cave. I'm thinking patience and the dark line of lips touching, pursed or in a kiss, a border is a border. Common days. Afternoons wild away. June, a reduction of burnt orange and hot pop on the dash, and the turn by hairpin turn out blossoming. The lily-gilded seahorse birdbath lawn, the seven dog, one baby yard, lily frothed at this speed. I lean to grab a bunch, get whipped, lily dazed. Hello, pollen. Hello, Indian tears, wild dust, little commas sweetening the swelter. The boys with lake in their beards and stamen-struck cheeks will slow in time to mud, to resin, to their guitars, I could have sworn, hollow dark. So we're back to the mountaintop again. This is the mountaintop as is, which is a little drunk. The mountaintop as is. Listening, listening in to the oncoming of my S-slurred inroads, tongue less lasso, more listlessness towards words. Fiddle me this, you one-note wonder. With one legato bow, breathe, tie my long-lost ends. Lessen me up. Where is the whisk in whining, risk in rhyming, endless lisping into sound-sick ground? Whose grouse is greener? What's the matter with the grass? Grenadine, grenade. I'm not talking, you're not talking. You're licking your wounds, you licker of wounds, you glistener of gloss. Does anyone need to evacuate? Are we doing okay? This poem, I guess, is in the voice of a sort of lonely person who lives with her, spends too much time with her cat. That's not autobiographical. writing notes to various objects. So correspondence. Forgive me, dear cockatiel. I didn't want your songs. I bought you for your antique iron cage, my empty corner. I feed you slivered almonds so I don't have to eat alone and love you only in my lines, plucking from your yellow crest, mining your hollow bones. Dear maraschino cherries, I bought you for your promise, cocktail parties, a month of Sundays. My apologies, my cabinets are full and you failed to meet my expectations before your expiration. I'm sorry to say you've gone the way of the cream. Dear cream, dear sugar, it's winter now. I need you to season the bucket of snow I scooped and brought inside. I gave you a pretty tea set home and left you there in peace. What thanks? You turned on me and hardened. Patience, please, dear snow. And cat, your claws are a privilege. Be happy with what you have, or I'll be tempted to adopt a fat-tailed dog to lie by the door and watch for prowlers. He'll snake that tail against the draft, and I'll forget I loved you. When we see you, the dog and I, we'll see a tattered gray rag. So come here, dear heap, dear muzzle, dear rumpled, rough-hewn dog. Run away to my feet. I'll conjure you a farm, a field, a sunrise, silhouetting a silo. I'll flip you sausage links. Pretend they're birds in flight. I guarantee you'll never be at fault. The blame is mine. I'll be your mother. I just feel like that poem's too mean. But it's my joke poem, so. This next poem, I mean, now I'm realizing a lot of these are personas in this book. I hadn't really thought about that much. Is from the voice of a little statue. I was in the Cloisters Museum, which is part of the Met, way up at the top of Manhattan. And they have all of this Gothic religious art. And there was a little sculpture on the wall looking out at the Hudson River, and it was just a head. And the plaque under the sculpture was called Head, Perhaps, of an Angel. I thought, well, that's poetic, isn't it? And lived with it for a while. This poem came from that. Head, perhaps, of an angel. This wall, what happened? My view, not bad, of the Hudson. The whole situation hinges on perhaps. My lovely wings, hap, hap, hap. I imagine or remember their loveliness, feathery beyond perfection, beyond flexibility, my fixation. Amid museum heel click, in the incessant mother-child chatter, rustling like skirts, tugging like a lifelike child at skirts, now less Romanesque, more internal, motherly skirts, soft motherly faces, I feel like a figment. Again, a voice says, the impression of life welling forth. Stop worrying yourself away, I'm thinking. Thinking is erosion. Thinking thought dust is perhappening the air. I'm living in my head, but if I had all of myself, doubtless, I'd cluster, loiter with the other complete angels in a corner of this room, stanza, where are we? A togethering, a warm patience of wings. The mountaintop unmoored. Envision canned oceans. And the tide pool, pull yourself together, girl. Forget her, girl. Forgo ether, girl. Do what you see urchins do, and gather, girl, the despoilment unspooling from your pockets. Get some spine, some twine. Do you ever feel makeshift through and through? Find your center, abalone shell, like a pull of moonshine, to tether you from there to there. Back to the glossaries. Glossary rewords. Reward. Ruts anew in the road that rewinds to now. With biscuits and in no time, even an old dog can play dead and come back to life. She'll shrug like a dish rag to the ground, just snap. Reclaim. Mine again. You are mine. Again, you're back against ha-ha onslaughter. Recall that summer we lost falling at Mount Minegan. Mineagain, invalid in Scrabble. Regret, what you send back on slender white bird plumes when you are disinclined. Recant, what are you giving up? Reneg, you played hearts with a handful of diamonds. Removal. See stain, tattoo, wallpaper, graffiti, dent, grease, mold, mildew, hair, stretch mark, cellulite, spider vein, mole, bat, rat, skunk, smoke, odor, asbestos, snow, rust, ash, stump, boulder, mountaintop, kidney stone, wisdom tooth, barrier, appendage, Indian, body, pain, phantom pain, spirit, sound, scar, and other reverberant remotions. Refuse. To the discard pile, refugee. To the refulgent diamonds in spades, incoherent light, playing at their edges. The mountaintop refuses his advances. I need you like I need a hole in my heart, a soul in my head, a hold in my hand and sand in my bed, a foal in my whale, a flood in my horse, a toad in my ode, a skull in my toast, a hot coal in my throat, a listen, drop dead, you toll in my house, you for whom I've bled, infrared, black and blue, you pistol spit, you stone face, you price on my hide, you violence, purebred. I need you like I need another vowel in my head, another hope in this hope heap of hope upon hope that becomes me, my knoll edge, my backbone, my hymnal to this earth. And back to the glossaries. Glossary tainted words. Ain't. Yes, I know, am not, is not, not, are not, have not, has not, do not, does not, did not. But what if there were a literal explosion deep inside the under, an in at, a sword through a box, through an assistant who is nowhere, carcasses to coal to carcasses, refusal and compost, unearthing, something invisible and unheard of, now here. Complaint, ain't compliant. Pliant, there is a plant in the woods called the obedient plant, or the false dragonhead, for its inflorescence of fire-breathing faces. So say the books, the obedient plant is an arranger, for its spikes hold the bend you give them, and the obedient plant is deer-resistant. You might enjoy the garden-friendly variety of false dragonhead called Miss Manners. Bepaint is archaic for tinge. The blush bepainted creek is irony. Her blush bepainted cheek is bloody, reddening, ruddying, redying, redying in the reverb. Ainted, see mountain, see curtain. Curtain, as in call, take a bow, little earthlet, bravo. Obtainted, see mountain. Mountain, see maintain. Maintain, to keep in an existing state, to persevere, to preserve from decline, to uphold and defend, to affirm in or as if in argument, from the French hand and to hold. So I just have two more. This second to last one is the title poem, Gloss, and it's short, so don't worry, but the poem has three sections, and each section is kind of an echo of the one before. So each section has six lines, and each line in each section echoes the line and the position of the other sections. Gloss. The clamor from the mouth, as in glossolalia, words untrapped and tumbling, the spirit into and out of the body from the margins. This and the laying on of hands, 20 at one with a girl in another world, her eyes miracle glazed. The clamor from the mouth, men untrapped like tumbling hallelujahs from the gut, the dark nonsense of the mountain. This and the laying on of hands, wives finding their silhouettes in the superficial better light, putting worlds back together. The clam up first, then the unshuttable trap, praising grit till it shines like a tumbled rock. This is laying it on thick, a fat white palm on a child's head. This is the mountain polished off. This is dark light. And one more poem. Thank you all so much for coming. And I meant to say it was really nice to meet Katie, and I'm really excited to hear her read. So this is a super honor to be here with Katie. This last poem is another one of the poems about watching TV, seeing West Virginia on TV, seeing Anderson Cooper in like the Sago Mine disaster, just hanging out in West Virginia, and trying to make sense of that. And so this poem, Casserole, I wrote after the Big Branch Mine disaster a few years ago. after reading about reporters who were writing articles about the folks in West Virginia who they stayed with and who served them meals and things like that. We were really nice to the reporters. Casserole. We are always welcoming you from our porches where we are always waiting, always eating pasta we bring to ourselves in Pyrex. We are always widening our smiles, our arms to embrace you too, always our hips turning to the side to sneak by you, honey, to the kitchen where we'll fix you a plate and a tall cold glass. Oh yes, the porch is mighty fine and the stars so bright and the night sky we're always likening to fabric, a blanket up to our chins, putting all this to bed. Heft of night, I wrote just moments ago, made the stars into pushpins countable, as we are always to let you in, always in our time of need. Yes, the night's a blanket, and the night's a pulling weight. We'll stay up till we can't see straight. Is that newsprint or soot on those boys' or men's faces? You'll attribute our skipping record of likenesses and kindnesses to the state we're in, that you find yourself in, always and suddenly, this bad shape like Naomi's body suddenly getting the news her brain has had for days, crumpled to the floorboards as the ground is falling, always down and down, beneath us deep as a downed draft of air or beer or life. We're good with soot, so we'll always take the ink off your hands, as if it were your coat to shoulder to shelter our paper white bodies that always remain always most true to you. Thank you all very much.
Thank you, Ida. Thank you.